originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. And I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 201, and also to those of you tuning into our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you're able to help, please visit the website. They rely on your donations at www.pdjf.org. So we have a very special show this evening. First show of the year. Joined by not one, but two Hall of Famers who were involved in arguably racing's greatest rivalry of all time. From 1977 to 1978, two horses met on 10 separate occasions, and the end result was our 11th Triple Crown winner. His greatest competitor separated only by a total of 2 lengths in those 3 Triple Crown races. Tonight, we get a chance to speak with the jockeys and hear their stories of the infamous rivalry between Affirmed and Aladar. So without further ado, it's a pleasure to introduce Steve Cawthon and George Velasquez. Steve, joining us live in studio tonight. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here, Christina.
George, you're on the phone. You're back home in New York, and I'd like to thank you for taking the time as well.
Thank you very much, Christina. It's always good to hear your voice.
You guys, I have been planning this for quite some time. After hearing both of your stories separately on the show a while back, I encourage our viewers to go to the website to check out those shows. But after doing those shows, I had an idea. Why don't we get you together and hearing your stories together? I would like to give a quick shout out to my friend Randy Coyle for helping me set this up. And a quick question for you guys. Do you guys talk often? Are you friends?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, really, Georgie, when I went up to New York, and it was 1976, I was 16 years old. I'd been riding for about 6 months, and, you know, my dad drove me up, and we drove up together, and he was there for 2 or 3 days, but basically for the first month, I lived in a motel about 4 miles from the track, and, you know, I didn't have a life other than go to the track, you know, get on, you know, talk to the trainers, see if, you know, maybe get on a horse or two, but it was the coldest winter in the, you know, 1976 was one of the coldest winters ever, or 1976 going into 1977. And, so, you know, and I'd go to the jocks room and play cards and, or watch the guys play cards. And, but Georgie was in my corner, or, you know, he was actually right next to me, but, you know, right from the beginning, you know, he took me under his wing and, you know, was just really, you know, friendly. And, you know, he invited me to his house a few times. We got to know his kids. And, you know, so that was all before the Triple Crown that, you know, I mean, so, and really since, you know, we always keep in touch and, we get together, obviously, you know, during events.
I remember very well, Stevie. I was battling with Angel Cordero Jr.
Right.
Every day, in and out.
Yeah.
And here comes this little kid, Steve Cousin. And it happened to to be such a good rider that he was giving us hell. He was beating us every day and every race. And I'm with Angel like, what is with this kid? Well, I mean, he used to ride 7, 8, 9 horses like we do, with this, and he's beating us. What are we going to do about this? Nothing we can do about it. Just got to battle Stevie and Angel. And it was out of handful.
It was a long, cold winter, wasn't it?
Nice kid, such a nice kid that you can avoid to like him. You have to like the kid. He was so quiet. He was humble. He was such a good rider, nice kid. So that's why I got along good with him. But other than that, he used to kick my butt all the time.
Well, I learned a lot from you kicking my butt plenty,
well,
too.
Well, yeah, every now and then that you made a little mistake, I will let you know.
Teach me a lesson, man. That's right.
You know, so you don't do it again.
Yep, absolutely.
But it was great. It was a good competition.
Yep, it was good days. Good days, yep.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this. Obviously, you two got along very well, but perfect time to ask this question. What was the atmosphere like in the jocks room, especially for you, George, when this young kid from Kentucky's coming in and taking all your business, or everyone's business, basically. He's killing it in New York. And obviously, you were friendly, but there had to be obviously a sense of competition. So when Steve would make a mistake, would you pull him aside? Would you help him out with maybe what he did wrong, or how was that like?
Yes. But actually, he never used to make mistakes, you know, like.
Because I was watching you guys, learning.
Once in a while, he do this and something wrong, and then I tell him, I put him aside, and I say, see, this and that. But he rarely made mistakes. He was very, very smart rider from the get-go. Yeah. So, of course, he's taking my business away and all that stuff, but I didn't mind because he was not cocky. He was not, thinking that he was better than everybody. He kept his profile low, down, you know, and he just go out there and ride and do his best. And I like about that. I like him about being so humble, so nice. So, you know, a kid that is beating the best in New York. And he's so nice, so quiet. So he just keeps his own way of being. You know, he was not cocky at all. And I like that, so. Yeah, of course, I bring him to the house for a few times, you know, I invite him over and all that. And that was it.
Steve, let me ask you this question now. During our show previously, you described your own riding style as you were quiet on a horse, you had a great judge of pace. How would you describe, having ridden with him previously, how would you describe George's riding style?
Well, you know, I mean, Georgie really could ride any kind of horse. You know, he could ride from the front. But his reputation, you know, was to, you know, give a horse a chance and really come with a strong finish. And, you know, like a horse like Aladar or, I can't even remember. He rode a filly called Devana Dale. I think she came from off the pit. You know, I can't remember. It was quite a few, but I mean, that was the reputation that I, you know, people kind of would talk about was, you know, Georgie's the best from, you know, coming from behind, you know. He gives a horse a chance, gets him balanced, you know, and he, you know, was, you know, he was poetry in motion. I mean, he really had, you know, he was just so fluid and, you know, just really in sync with, you know, those horses and a great stick rider. I mean, you know, he looked good. He just always looked good. He never looked bad, no matter what happened. And, you know, when they were good enough, they won, you know, for sure. And, probably won a lot that, you know, weren't good enough. Just, you know, he always seemed to get the best out of his horses. And I know, you know, like everything, there's a lot of trainers up there, but, you know, I mean, everybody, all the trainers loves having, you know, trusted Georgie to always do his best and give him, you know, give him everything he had. So, you know, like I said, I didn't say a lot when I was up there, but I always had my eyes open, and I, you know, I watched, you know, Angel Cordero was a great rider as well. He looked good on a horse, but Georgie, you know, just was, like you said, I don't think, you know, not that he was, obviously I didn't look like him, we're different sort of shape, body type or whatever, but he was, you know, really pretty on a horse and never got in their way and, you know, just, you know, got a lot out of him. You know, he'd switch sticks and hit him left-handed a couple times, and if they didn't run, then it was only because they couldn't. Couldn't go any faster.
I thank you for those comments, Steve. But, you know, I enjoy riding so much, and you don't win the races at the half a mile pole. That's why I like to be a little bit off the pace and make my run at the right time and then finish and the last eighth of a mile strong. And I always save a little bit of horse for the end so I can fight the race and win the race. And I enjoyed it very much. Yeah, and that was my style. Yeah, a little bit off the pace and come charging at the end.
Yep. It's hard to give up something that you're good at, right? That's what I always say. Everybody always asks me, do you miss racing? I say, well, I do, because I know I'm never going to be as good at anything else in my lifetime as I was, you know, was at that. So it's impossible.
Well, I'll tell you what, Stevie, I retired in 1997, and I still miss riding.
Yeah.
I still dream that I'm
doing
riding,
that
I'm winning, that I'm all out whipping and driving. Excuse me. I still miss it so much, you know. It's a long time ago.
It's a part of you. No doubt.
Talking about your strengths, you two obviously used those strengths to fit perfectly with Affirmed and Aladar. Steve, with your great judge of pace, you were able to use his speed to your advantage and put him where you needed. George, with your ability to come off from the pace with Aladar. And let's start that conversation now. Steve, you connected with Affirmed prior to the Hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
George, you connected with Aladar prior to the Champagne. So, Steve, tell us how you got them out.
You know, it's just one of those things. I was in the right place at the right time. I'd ridden a few horses for Laz Barrera when I first got back from my injury. I was out, like, for the month of May, I think, and I just came back to Belmont and rode it. And one of the first horses I rode, the first horse I rode back was a horse called Little Miracle, who happened to be a half brother to Affirmed by some, you know, horse I'd never heard of, some stallion that, you know, I don't even know, you know, who bred him. I don't think Mr. Wilson bred him. It was before he maybe got the mare. I don't know. But, Laz somehow had the horse and I won on him. And so, anyway, eventually, not too long after that, we moved up to Saratoga, and Angel had ridden Affirmed, and so a couple times, and Lafitte had ridden him out in California and won on him, and we got to Saratoga, and the Sanford Stakes, he asked Angel if he would ride him, and Angel had found some horse called Tilt Up that Leroy Jolly had that was really fast. I think he'd won on him, and, you know, at that point, I don't think anybody realized how good Affirmed was. And so he said, I'm riding Tilt Up. And so then I assumed that he asked Lafitte if he wanted to come ride him. But, you know, obviously back then the Sanford was a $40,000 stake race. So, you know, to fly all the way out there, you know, and he just won on him by 7 or 8 lengths in the Hollywood Futurity. Well, that's what it was called back then, whatever. I don't even know what that race is called anymore. But it was a 2-year-old race, and he won by 7 or 8 lengths. But, you know, obviously he didn't, you know, impress him enough to make him want to come all the way back to, you know, because obviously Saratoga is not the easiest place to get to. So, yeah, I was third choice, basically. You know, he won the Sanford. And to be quite honest, after I won on him that day, you know, I mean, I knew it was he was a nice horse because, you know, he won a stake race at Saratoga. That's, you know, any horse that wins a stake at Saratoga's got to be a nice horse. But he didn't impress me that day. He wanted to hang out down the stretch a little bit, and he still won easy. He won by a couple of lengths. But the next race was the Hopeful Stakes, and Eddie Maple was riding him in, back then. And, of course, you know, we all had heard about Aladar. Aladar, you know, beaten the firm once in one stake, I think. Can't remember what it was called.
Great American.
Great American. Mm-hmm. And before he went out to California, and this was the first time they were meeting since then. And so I knew, you know, he was the talking horse. But it was kind of an amazing feeling for me. It was the first time I'd really ever felt that, was when, you know, I was just sitting just off the pace, and I'd kind of gone, you know, was starting to inch up towards the lead, and then here came Aladar. And when he came, these two horses, just like, it felt like they dropped down about a foot, and they just accelerated, you know, like I'd never accelerated on a horse before. And, I mean, they finished the last, you know, furlong and a half, you know, unbelievably fast, and I knew that day that he was a very special horse. Both of them. I knew that both of them were good, you know, so, you know, exceptional. But I never had any idea what was going to take place, you know, down the road. It just, I just knew they were both, you know, really top horses.
Well, and for you to say that, Steve, you'd won the 77 Eclipse Award for Outstanding Apprentice and for Outstanding Jockey that year. You'd obviously had plenty of wins under your belt at that point. You were the top, one of the top riders in the country. So for you to say that, that you'd never felt that before, that
right.
just goes to show people what a special
yeah.
horse.
And I'd ridden some other good horses. I was riding a horse called Sauce Boat. There was about three horses, three other two-year-old colts that I was riding. One of them was Sauce Boat, and I mean, I'd won the Arlington Washington Futurity on him. And there was a couple others that were, you know, pretty solid horses, but you know, when it came to making the decision, it was not even a, you know, question. They were just, you know, besides the acceleration that he had, it was his mind. It was his mind, you know. He just was, you know, he was a fighter, and I just knew he was the horse to be on.
I read an article that described their stature. Aladar was such a beautiful, good-looking, the picture-perfect version of a racehorse. Affirmed was a little bit on the smaller side, maybe not quite as big and
robust, yeah.
Good word, yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, you know, Aladar was just a big, you know, muscular, strong-bodied, pretty, you know, he knew, you know, like both of them, they both knew they were good. But when, you know, when Aladar would stand there, you'd kind of stand back. And I mean, literally, sometimes I would see him, as, you know, Affirm was so laid back most of the time, that, you know, sometimes you'd think he was a pony horse. He'd just be there, you know, so relaxed. And but at the same time, you know, if something happened, he was he would react like a cat. I mean, he was that quick. In fact, that was the first time Laz got his first heart attack was, or, you know, that's what they said, was when he got loose and said Santa Anita right before the Santa Anita Derby. And because Tutu, who'd ridden, the guy who rode him every day in the mornings, you know, everything was going fine, and then whatever, he saw something, and he was just like out from under him like in a half a second and galloping the wrong way down the racetrack. So but you know, they were just like I said, Affirm was, you know, very lean and light framed, but he had, you know, he was 16, a little over 16 hands tall. He had a great shoulder, a great hip. You know, he just wasn't as, you know, masculine looking. He was like a young kid at that stage, but he was, his muscle was, you know, tight and strong. You know, he was like he would be more like a gymnast, you know, and Aladar was a weightlifter.
So, Steve, after the Hopeful, you sent Affirm to Belmont for the Grade 1 Futurity, going right. 7 furlongs, and you were sent off as the favorite. Of course, Aladar was also in the race, and Aladar was known for taking a liking to Belmont Park. Were you at all concerned, obviously, the distance a bit longer as well?
Yeah, you know, obviously this was the early stages of the rivalry, and I was just glad to be riding a really good horse and have a chance in the Futurity. But it was a really great race. I mean, the Hopeful was a really exciting race. I think we won by half a length. But the futurity, you know, Aladar came and, you know, we were head and head all the way down the lane and, you know, I won by a nostril. I mean, like, it was half an inch and it was a bob of the head. But like I said, you know, that was the thing, was both of these horses, you know, they're really, you know, there wasn't a lot between them. And I think, you know, I had an advantage by tactically being able to place him in a little better spot, not maybe lose as much ground. But eventually he was always coming and we hooked up and, you know, that was a particularly, you know, tight, exciting race. And, you know, held on by a hair. You know, and then we're moving on to the next race, which was the Champagne.
At this point, the score was affirmed 3, Aladar 1. And George, you came into the picture.
Yes. I remember the futurity that turning for home, I thought I was a winner. I thought I was going to go right by Stevie. And I got to him, and his horse just took off with me. And we keep battling all the way down the stretch, and he beat me by a head or something like that, or a neck.
You rode him in the futurity, did you?
Yes, I did. I did. I rode Aladar.
Okay.
And then when we came to the Champagne, Stevie's horse was entertained by another horse turning for him. So he just got his eyes and little, these are the horse. And I came from way back, and I just blew by him. I opened up 3 on him, and when he saw my horse, he took off running again, and he was coming back, and he cut the what do you call, the distance to, from 3 to the length and a half. That was the Champagne stage. Well, I beat him. I was so happy. The problem was for the next race.
Well, George, let's back up a minute. I do want to give a little backstory here on Aladar and how you got the mount. Of course, Aladar was running for Calumet. John Veach was the trainer. And Calumet at the time had kind of been in a bit of a dry spell. They were looking for another big horse, and here comes Aladar. And obviously, the Champagne was run over a muddy track. Steve affirmed wasn't really known for handling the off-going. And so, as you mentioned, affirmed was dueling for the lead. And here you come flying on the outside. And Steve, let's hear your take on the Champagne and how the race set up.
Yeah, it's exactly like Georgie said. I was, you know, sitting second or third. And I had kind of gone after the leaders and just about hit the front. And, you know, was thinking I was going to go on, you know, I knew Aladar was going to come at some point, but when he did come wide, you know, he accelerated by me quick. And as Georgie said, you know, I think my horse was like focused on the horse right next to him, and he went by so quick that it did take me a while to get back. But I also don't think my horse loved the off track. You know, the other time that I nearly got beat was in the Jim Dandy, which was an off track, and it, you know, it just wasn't his favorite surface, you know, but you know, no excuse, you know, Aladar beat him, you know, fair and square. It was just, as you say, one of those things where, you know, I was thinking, well, next time if he goes out to the middle, I'm going with him. But, you know, it never worked out that way. Just, so, you know, we were, you know, obviously at that point, it was, you know, if nobody had raced anymore, Aladar would have ended up being champion 2-year-old based on that. But, of course, Laz Barrera being the guy he was, you know, he started, you know, saying stuff like, you know, I'm going to Laurel and, you know, I know John Veach is probably scared, you know, trying to egg John Veach into running and, you know, and then they ended up running. So, you know, but you know, these two horses, you know, they were amazing because when you think of all the times, you know, that they met and how they fought each other, you know, it wouldn't be surprising for, you know, either one of them to, you know, say, I've had enough of this crap. But, you know, every time they came back, you know, and they, you know, they always gave their all. and it was a fun rivalry to be a part of. A, because, you know, like you said, Georgie and I, you know, admired each other and were friends, and we were lucky enough to be on these two horses. It was just such a great thing to be involved with. And, you know, to be quite honest, without Affirmed or without Aladar, you know, it wouldn't have been the same. You know, it was just what was the greatest thing about them was, you know, to get two great horses in the same era, you know, the same year. To have that kind of, you know, it was George Foreman and, you know, Al Lee, you know, it was just back and forth, you know.
George, we only
anyway,
have...
And going back, Christina, after the hopeful, when a friend beat Aladar, Maple was on it. And then I was doing a writing for John Beach. So he decided to take Maple off and put me on, because I actually, that was my mount before he ran his first time. I was working Aladar, and I got suspended or something like that when he made his debut, and I couldn't ride him. Maple rode him, and then after the hopeful that he got beat, John Beach put me back on. And that's when the whole thing started. So after the champagne, then I beat him. I said, man, I was going to beat him all the time. I thought so. So here comes the, what do you call that race?
We went to the Laurel Futurity next, yeah.
Yeah, the Laurel Futurity, and then you beat me by a neck or so.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that only a four-horse field, the Laurel Futurity?
Five, I think it was five, but yeah, it was basically two.
Right.
You know, and everybody knew it, and it was just, and then, you know, then the thing was, you know, that Calumet always went to Florida, and I think, you know, Laz had started, he'd been going to California, and he liked it out there, but I think he also thought, you know, I need to get this horse away from Aladar for a while, you know, get him, build him up some, so... You know, so we went out to the West Coast, and of course it was like the rainiest winter ever. You know, I mean, we missed the first, you know, we missed our works. You know, it was like, were we gonna ever get ready to be able to run? And then finally, you know, we ended up running him in a, you know, allowance race, just because that was, you know, we needed to get a run into him, and he, of course, he won, and then he won some race out there, the Balzac or something. And that was all good. Of course, you know, he's winning by a length and a half, too, because Aladar's on the East Coast winning by 7-10, you know. So I got suspended out there, and I missed the ride in the Santa Anita Derby. Lafitte rode him. So he wins that by 10. So I don't know how Lafitte used to win by 10 on him, but I could never win by 10. I was just focused on trying to win. But luckily, I got to keep the mount, and I rode him in the Hollywood Derby, which was a race. Again, he was, I think, trying to remember the horse he beat, but, you know, he wasn't a superstar horse, but we beat him by two lengths. But once I hit the front, I had to keep after him, you know, and everybody's like, there's no way he's going to beat, you know, Aladar now, because Aladar's winning by 10. He won the, you know, the Bluegrass by, God, forever, wasn't it? 10 or something lengths, I think. And, so to be quite honest, you know, we came back to the Derby, and I was very confident in my horse. But the only thing I was, like, you know, wary of is, you know, Aladar's been, you know, maybe he's gotten better. I don't know. You know, he's, you know, some horses improve.
All right, guys, we will continue this after a quick commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit Tito'sVodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Penna of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcotte. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too, and I thank you.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Affirmed on the inside, takes command again. Believe it is second, Aladar gains ground third. They're in the final furlong. It's Affirmed with Stevie Calkin showing the way by 2.5. Believe it with Ed Maple's next on the outside. Aladar is third, but it's going to be Affirmed. Affirmed with Steve Calkin is going to win this 104th running of the Kentucky Derby. Aladar is second, Believe it third. Gap of four lengths followed by Darby Creek Road, Aesop's Fable in the rest. Well, it was Affirmed stalking the early pace and quickly moving to command and never letting it go. Final time, 2:01.15. Affirmed wins the Kentucky Derby.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigle, and I am joined tonight by Steve Cawthon and George Velasquez. George, as Steve mentioned, Affirmed went to the West Coast, and Aladar stayed on the East Coast and won the Grade 2 Remsen. And were you aboard for that ride?
Yes, and in Florida, he won, an allowance race, 7/8 of a mile. He ran, like, amazing 21, something like that, very fast. And then we went to for the Bluegrass, and he won the Bluegrass easily. And then we made in the Derby. And the Derby... For some reason, my horse was not handling the track at the beginning too well. So he was too far back. And turning for home, he took off running, and finally he got his stride on. And he finished second by maybe a length and a half. So I'm thinking, like, well, it was a problem with the track. He was too far back. He was not handling it. Now, we went to the Preakness.
Well, George, let's hang tight. Let's hang tight real quick. I want to mention you also won the Bluegrass by 13 lengths. So you were set off as the favorite in the Derby. And, of course, the Bluegrass was really special. The owners who were in their 80s were able to go to Keeneland for the Bluegrass since they only lived about a mile away. So that was a really special moment for the connections. And as you mentioned, in the Derby, wasn't handling the track. Well, I heard, and this might be a rumor, but I heard... a rock or a clump of dirt might have hit him in the face and made him drop back so far in the Derby. Do you think that's true?
No, that's not true. No. No. He was just not handling the track at the beginning, the first half a mile. Then after that, when we got to about the 5-8 pole, and then he started come on to be himself. And by the time we got to the quarter pole, he was rolling. And then I'm thinking, like, well, I got beat because he was too far back, you know. But that was not the case.
Well, and Steve...
The case was that Affirm was in my way all the time.
Well, and Steve, you were able to save enough horse. He won pretty easily in the Derby, yeah. But you didn't really have to use him.
I think I was lucky to win that Georgie's horse didn't. It would have been a lot, you know, I wouldn't say I would have won the Triple Crown if you know, he had had a tougher race there because, you know, as we all know, it's tough to get through those races, and especially when you're running against a great horse like Aladar every time. But luckily for me, you know, the fact that Georgie's horse didn't come until late, and, you know, basically he did win pretty comfortably, and although, you know, I was hitting him a few times, it was just taps and just really trying to keep him focused. So
that was your first Derby.
And that was my only Derby. Only time I've ever ridden in the Derby. Probably 8 months later, I was in England. That's how quick they got rid of me after I won the Triple Crown. Just kicked me out. But, you know, it was obviously for me, it was a great thing. My whole family, I think my dad had to get 50 some odd people tickets to come, you know, our family and friends and stuff like that. So just coming home to Kentucky to ride at Churchill and, you know, win kind of one of the biggest race really in thoroughbred horse racing at 18, was exciting as heck for me. But, you know, I was like, you know, to be quite honest, I took each race at a time. You know, like I wasn't ever thinking I'm going to win the Triple Crown because I knew, as you say, Aladar's there. You know, I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, how are we going to figure out how to beat Aladar in this race? You know, never. And so then we went from the Derby, which, you know, it turned out we won comfortably. But, you know, I knew in the back of my head he didn't really fire, you know, like something was up. You know, he would have, if he was, things had gone right, he would have been challenging me somewhere after we turned into the lane at the latest. So we went to the Preakness, and, of course, John Veitch, you know, they did a quick 6 furlong work. I mean, like he worked like 6 furlongs and 9 and change, you know, or some crazy 10 and change, something like that, to, you know, get him, you know, he said, you know, we're gonna be there quicker this time. And, you know, so we kind of knew that was the plan. Of course, it was a smaller field. There wasn't really any particular pace setter. And I knew that it was very likely that I might, but that was the great thing about Affirmed is that's not a problem. That, you know, that's actually in some ways an advantage. So, again, you know, I was able to, you know, kind of ride my race, dictate the pace, and I'm literally sitting on a ton of horse waiting for Aladar to come, you know, at the head of the lane.
Well, Steve, let's listen to the replay of the 1978 Preakness.
Yeah, well, he was very athletic.
George, that horse. Hey, George, we're going to listen to the replay real quick, okay?
Okay.
They're into the stretch. 3/16 of a mile to go. Affirmed holds that lead. Aladar up on the outside to join the leaders. They come on down to the eighth pole. It's Aladar on the outside. Affirmed along the rail. Inside the eighth pole, it's Affirmed holding a slight lead. Aladar is charging at him. Coming on to the 16th pole, it's Affirmed. Aladar on the outside. They come on down to the finish. Affirmed and Aladar. Here's the finish. Affirmed.
George, what do you think when you hear that replay?
Well, my heart starts beating fast because I feel like I'm in the race again.
What was your plan? As Steve mentioned, you guys put a quick work into Aladar, hoping to keep him closer, only a 7-horse field. So going into the race, were you constantly getting after him to keep him involved, to keep him in range to catch Affirmed?
Well, I guess because the workout that he had put some speed on him, and he was closer than what I was thinking, you know, that I was going to be. So, and turning for home, I thought I was a winner. I thought I was a winner, and he proved me wrong. He got me again.
But that day, too, we really quickened up down the stretch. I mean,
yes.
When Aladar did come to me, I mean, like I said, I saved as much as I could, and we really accelerated. I think it was actually the fastest final 3/16 ever run in the Preakness.
Wow.
So that's saying something. But, you know, they really finished strong. And like you said, that day, again, now that day, although, you know, he was really pressuring me. I just always felt like I had him, you know. I thought I got him, you know. I was, and again, I, you know, kind of in the back of my mind, I was thinking, I got to save something for the Belmont, you know, if I can. But so, I mean, you know, I was obviously riding my, you know, tail off, and he was giving me what he had. But, you know, I just thought, I got him. I didn't have to. I mean, I gave him some backhanders and kept him, like I said. But he didn't need to be focused because he had Aladar and looking him in the eye. So, you know, it was a great race. And, again, I thought, you know, like I said, I'm thinking, a mile and a half, I don't know if that's going to be good for me or not, you know. But, you know, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Well, George, you had to be pretty confident going into the Belmont, given your horse's running style and the added distance.
Yes, definitely. Our friend was such an athletic horse. He was quick out of the gate. He had speed. You can place him wherever you want to. But the mile and a half, I thought that was going to suit my horse better than a friend, you know. So, and when we got to going to the first turn, David was just sitting on that front, just going so easily. I said, man, I got to go get him right away. So I started asking Alida. By the time we got to the first turn, leaving the first turn, I'm on top of that front. I was going to increase the pace, and every pole was faster and faster and faster. And turning for home, I put a neck in front of him or ahead. And I said, well, okay, now I got it. And I started riding Steven a little close, just to like intimidate his horse. That was the wrong thing to do, because he was a fighter. He fought me back, and I got him by the head. He come back at the 8th pole. I said, oh, no, here he come again. Excuse me. And then he beat me again. He passed the wire. And the best thing is that I have to do is say congratulations, Steve, because he just beat me in a tremendous race. Yeah. It was a fight for that race. It was the Triple Crown race. And I have to say congratulations, Steve.
Because you're a good guy.
I really wanted to.
That's because you're a classy guy. That's right. But no, it was, like you said, to be quite honest, I don't think there's ever been a better race run with that much on the line, you know, for a Triple Crown, you know, for two horses to lay it on the, you know, lay it down like they did and give what they, you know, give their hearts. And, you know, it was, yeah. I mean, like I said, they made each
what
other.
What a race.
They made each other.
What a race.
Yeah. And Chick Anderson had a pretty good call, too. That was pretty impressive. Yeah.
Well, let's hear that call right now.
The pace is increasing as they come to the head of the stretch. It is still affirmed as they come to the quarter pole. He's holding on to a head lead. Alidar is outside of him and challenging that lead. The two are heads apart, and Alidar's got a lead. Alidar put a head in front, right in the middle of the stretch. It's Alidar and Affirmed battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Alidar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Alidar heads apart. Affirmed's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
Memories, eh?
I was riding you close to
him. Oh, you gave me,
to be able to hit him right-handed.
I know.
I say, let him
well, you knew how bad I was left-handed, right?
Yeah.
But, hey, Affirmed he had enough to, he was, he said he had a lot of heart. He did.
Yeah.
They both did. I mean, that's what I've often said, you know, like.
They always beat the third horse by 10.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah. As many, like you said, as many battles as they had together, you know, it wouldn't have been hard for either one of them to say enough of this. But every time they came back till you know, like you said, your horse broke down, right? So after the Travers, yeah, you got injured and he wasn't the same after that. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, Steve, going into the Belmonts, just to mention, you talked about in an article I read, Laz Barrera was so good at getting a horse to relax.
Yeah.
And to save himself, which obviously you were good at as well in the race. You used him just enough in each three of those races. And I thought it was so interesting, your description of the Belmont in one particular article where you said, and I can relate to this, you very rarely ever hear the crowd when you're riding. Mm-hmm. But tell us, the Belmont was a little bit different. You knew when Aledar was coming.
Belmont's a huge track. So, I mean, you know, like, I don't even, whatever the distance is on most tracks, it's even further at Belmont when you're on the backside. And, yeah, normally you never hear it. But the, whatever, there was 65, 70,000 people there that day. And I knew it because when Georgie decided, like you said, I was getting too easy of a lead, and he, you know, got Aledar running and came up to push me a little bit. The crowd just, you could hear the eruption because they thought, here it is, it's on. This is what we came to see, you know, and it was. It was like you say, I think they got every cent's worth that they came to get. So it was, when you get to the final thing of whatever, a football, the Super Bowl or whatever, you know, it's often anticlimactic. But this was, you know, better than anybody could have imagined.
Well, and you had never hit him left-handed before.
I had not. You know, like I said, I really, you know, I didn't love using my left hand. I mean, I eventually got better at it, you know, but at that stage, I mean, I was still only 18. I learned to do it, but it wasn't my most comfortable move. And it was like, as I was doing it, I was thinking, don't drop this damn thing. luckily I didn't. And I think it, you know, more than as much as anything, maybe surprised him a little, because Affirm was really, you know, he was at the end of, you know, he felt a little bit fatigued, you know, it's a long whole thing. And, you know, like I said, Aledar was pressing us hard and I could feel him, you know, like, oh, I hope I'm not coming up empty. And I thought, you know, today's the day, now or never, you know, it's like, I got to go for everything. And I hit him left-handed and he responded, like Georgie said, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he was digging in. And once I got my head back in front, you know, I felt like, you know, like Georgie thought he had me. I thought, oh, now I got him again. Cause I certainly was not, you know, at the head of the stretch, I was thinking, uh-oh, this is going to be tough. Because, you know, I could, like I said, feel a little bit of a sense of, you know, fatigue and Affirmed at that stage. And really, when they brought him back into the winner's circle, I mean, there's a picture of his head's like almost on the ground. He was just, he had literally given every ounce he had to, you know, to get the job done.
When you hit him left-handed, was it at that point that he switched leads, or had he already?
No, he'd already switched leads. He hadn't, it wasn't to make him switch leads. It was just to, you know, like I said, to try to, sorry about that.
George, was it Aledar? Did Aledar always switch leads?
And it's funny. And most of his races, he don't want to switch to the right. You know, like turning for home, they go to the right, and they take off. You know, he always stay on the left all the time. And I'll tell you what, only one race that I rode him, there was a prep for the, I think it was a prep for the
Florida Derby, maybe?
No. That was in Saratoga. He beat the older horses.
Oh, the Whitney.
Yeah, the Whitney. And the Whitney, he did change stride that day, and he won by 10. Beat the older horses by 10. But any other races, he's in the left lead all the way around, all the way from the gate. He goes left, never change.
So he didn't switch into Belmont?
And the Belmont, he never changed. Mm. He never did.
Well, and the
apparently he gave me everything he got, you know, even though he's in the wrong lead. But I don't know. It makes me wonder. Because in the Whitney, he changed and he won by 10, beating all the horses. So I don't know.
Yeah, you rode him in the Whitney after the Belmont, and you actually beat J.O. Tobin, who had previously beaten Seattle Slough. So that just goes to show you the caliber of horses Aledar beat in the Whitney. And then that was before the Travers, of course, and that was an interesting race. in and of itself. Steve, unfortunately, I think you were injured.
I had a fall and, yeah, injured my knee, so I was out.
That had to be excruciating to know this race was coming up.
And yeah, you know, I mean, it was tough. Just, you know, like you said, you're in that middle of all that. It was so great, everything, you know, up to that. And then he'd won the Jim Dandy, and like I said, it was an off track, and Sensitive Prince had gotten off to 7 or 8, 9 length, and I had to run him down. I mean, it was, I was obviously very disappointed. And, you know, the thing about it is, you know, when you get on a horse, you know, you're doing your thing. So it's when you're in the stands that you know, you can't control anything. You got no, so it's really, you know, you get more nervous up there when you can't do anything. So, anyway, that's all I had to do with it. The rest was nothing. I wasn't involved.
So George, the Travers, Saratoga, Lafitte shipped in to ride Affirmed, and Cordero was on a horse, Shake, Shake, Shake. Those two horses, Affirmed and Shake, 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 were dueling for the lead. And all of a sudden, George, you decided to go up the inside. And
this is what I remember. Going to the half a mile pole, Angel's horse is drifting out. It's taking Affirmed out. It's taking Lafitte way out. And when here comes the turn, so I say, well, I'm going to drop in. I know my horse do his best outside, but, man, the hole was so big inside. I said, I got to go for it. So I went, I drop in, and I let him go a little bit. And he's in high gear now, about 3.5, something like that. And Lafitte, when he see the Angel's horse drifting out, and I don't know if he thought the Angel was doing it on purpose or what, but Lafitte just dropped in. When he dropped in, he didn't even look back or anything. And my horse was in high gear. And he bounced me around the fence. And forget about it. I lost my position from second that I was, I think. He went back to fourth and come back. And tried to beat Affirmed again. He was coming back at him, running at him. And I got beat, but then I couldn't follow him. They took Lafitte down. They took his horse down, his number down. And they shoot. They shoot. It was going to be another terrific race because my horse was in high gear when Lafitte came down. And I know that I know how much of a fighter it was Affirmed. So when it come to me, he's gonna take off. But he didn't. I think he misjudged. Lafitte misjudged that my how fast my horse is running. So he dropped in and he almost dropped in. So they had to take him down. And I don't really want to beat him that way with a disqualification. But hey, I take it.
Right?
I took it anyway. So
their last meeting together, Aladar beat Affirmed due to disqualification in the Travers, 1978. And then we only have 5 minutes left here on the show. Of course, Affirmed was never really the same. And Aladar. Right. Aladar was never the same. And had an injury, and then he retired. And then tell us the next couple races with Affirmed.
So the next race was the Marble Cup. I rode in Angel rode Seattle Slough. Kruger had ridden him at Meadowlands. He got beat, so they took him off, put Angel on. And, you know, we broke out, and I was laying just off, you know, a couple lengths off of Seattle Slough. You know, we weren't going crazy. So, but, you know, the way I look at it, I mean, when I went to go after him, just Seattle Slough just kept finding. I mean, I never really even got close to being able to challenge him. He just, you know, on that day he was a better horse, you know, and, you know, in my mind, of course, you know, Seattle Slough was he was a Triple Crown winner, just like Affirmed was. And in my mind, a 4-year-old at that stage has got an advantage over a 3-year-old. You know, it's just a fact. The next year, Affirmed was running against Spectacular Bid, and he was beating him. And then the next year, Spectacular Bid came back. And, of course, he didn't have any great horse to be. He was, like, undefeated and was winning everything by five lengths, you know. But, like you said, it was an exciting race. It just, you know, wasn't our day. And I really didn't have an excuse. Everybody was trying to make an excuse. Mrs. Wilson was trying to make an excuse. Laz was, you know, like I was asleep at the wheel. You know, I disagree. I think it was just, you know, a good four-year-old's better than a good, you know, a great four-year-old's better than a great three-year-old, in my opinion. But, you know, that doesn't make either of them any less.
Well, eventually, they were both standing at stud at Calumet for a time, and a reporter would see them racing with each other through the paddocks, which I thought was pretty cruel. Of course, Aladar produced some champions, affirmed it as well, and affirmed lived a good long life. Aladar, a bit of a strange story, unfortunate end to him, but just arguably the greatest rivalry of all time. Can't believe we got you both together at the same time. This has been fantastic. Of course, Steve, after the Triple Crown, eventually went to Europe.
Yeah, not that long after.
Not that long after. And you had an incredibly successful career in Europe. You were British championship jockey three times.
Yep.
And you won every derby.
Everywhere.
Imaginable. I couldn't even list them.
There's probably some one in Turkey or somewhere, but I didn't ride in that one. So.
And George, you, of course, had an incredibly successful career as well. You retired in 1997. You won a Breeders' Cup Classic race. Of course, you won another Derby and another Preakness. And you were a jocks agent. And are you doing that now, George?
Not right now, Christina, because I went through a back surgery about a year ago. And then I was fine for 6-7 months. And all of a sudden, the pain came back again. So I've been going to the doctors, and they gave me some kind of needle, a shot in there, and I'm right now. I'm a little better. I'm about ready to go back to work.
Good.
But I haven't worked since last June, I believe.
Well, George, I hope you feel better. Steve, of course, you have a very successful breeding farm. You're here in Lexington for the sale today, but unfortunately. Love to talk more with you guys, but we are all out of time. George, you're on the phone. Thank you so much for joining us. Wishing you all the best.
Thank you, Christina. The best to you and a happy new year. A healthy one to you, Stevie, too, and your family.
All right,
and
Phil.
It's always great to talk to you, Stevie.
Always a pleasure, buddy.
Yeah, take care.
Steve, great seeing you here in person.
Pleasure.
Thanks for taking the time.
Fun.
All the best.
We'll have to do it again.
I love it. Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. Now be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thanks for listening.